Welcome back to Happy Hour with Jovi and Curtis. How you doing, Curtis?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey,
it's awesome to be back, man. Let me tell you, this week went by so fast. I couldn't wait to come back here.
It did, and I was when I listened to the podcast from last week, I was pleasantly surprised that I didn't sound like a big chode. I mean, the whole time through, I was like, hey, I don't sound too bad, I guess. I mean, I can always sound worse, like I probably am right now, but you know, it's fine. It's a starting place anyway.
Oh yeah, a lot of stuff has been going on this week. The really, really big thing I wanted to talk to you about was yesterday was Repeal Day, which is very near and dear to my heart as someone who loves alcohol. And 79 years ago, the repeal of Prohibition. And I was just thinking, what a sad thought if we thought, what if it was never repealed? First of all, we wouldn't have Happy Hour right now. We'd be underground somewhere.
Right. What would
in a speakeasy.
What would I have been doing with my life for the last 20 years? I mean, I could be a father, I guess, but then where's all the fun parts, you know?
Exactly. And our jobs and I don't know. There's just so much stuff. It's just amazing to think that in that amount of time, I know it's, you know, 79 years is a pretty significant amount of time, but imagine if it was never repealed, that would be a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, I think what's interesting too is that not only, I mean, it was repealed 79 years ago, but what are the crazy alcohol laws that we still have hanging around? I mean, there are places where, I mean, I grew up in South Dakota where you can't buy any kind of alcohol after, say, 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. So what are you going to do?
And all day Sunday, you can't buy it.
All day Sunday, you know, and then maybe.
Election day.
Well, that makes sense, I think.
No, it doesn't. I think you should be allowed to drink on election day. Come on.
Well, yeah, I suppose. It's they make the lines tolerable.
Yeah, at least before elections or after, at least. Right. Who knows? Like, there's some really insane ones out there. Like, I think there's still one in Ohio on the books that a lady cannot be within 25 feet of a bar counter, which I thought was hilarious because, you know, there'd be so many people in violation of that every day that she'd get arrested.
That just seems outrageous.
It's post-prohibition laws.
Sausage parties everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many that we could talk about. I mean, here, we're kind of fortunate in California. We really don't have that many. I mean, it seems like we have a lot of rules, but we really don't. I mean, between 2 and 6, for the most part, you can't serve. I mean, every place is different, obviously, but between 2 and 6 a.m. and the rest of that, 7 days a week, we can have 10, 11, 12% alcohol beers. I feel pretty lucky to live in California.
And coming from South Dakota, and I've only been in California for 3 years, the first Sunday that I went to the store at 8 o'clock in the morning to pick up something that I needed for breakfast, and I saw somebody pushing a cart full of beer around the store. I thought I was in heaven. I thought, this is why I love California. I've only been here like 24 hours, but this is my favorite by far, my favorite state by far.
And the fact that you could buy a cart full of alcohol.
Well, just at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning, right?
That's no problem. But and you know, a lot of other things. Well, we talked last time about the. You were telling me about the top beers from each state, which I thought that is kind of an interesting ranking. How would you even do that?
Right, and it gets back to a point we made last week too about who are the people who are ranking these, and where do they come up with, you know, what distributors do they have to get their hands on this, and what network are they pulling from? And there's a couple, there's some really interesting ones throughout. One of them, I think, that's probably no surprise to anyone was that Pliny the Elder was the number one beer from California.
For California, right. Russian River Brewing, in case anybody doesn't know. Probably, one of the hardest beers to get your hands on is the Colt. I mean, it's amazingly hard to get that beer.
Right, so that one, they're only brewing it once a year, and then when it's done, it runs out. Is that what the deal is?
Something like that. Or they will never... direct from Russian River is they will never ever increase production, so that beer, whatever it is, X amount of barrels that they're making, there will never be more of it. So you know, supply and demand, the demand is insane for that beer, and the supply is very limited. So it's just really hard. It's the number one beer that I get asked for day in and day out, and I think any place you walk into, the first question is like, "Do you have Pliny the Elder?"
Right, and I think I'm probably going to get hate mail from this one, but it's building the hype for it. And I like the beer plenty, but I think there are other double IPAs that I would, you know, just as soon go and spend maybe $6 a bottle and be able to have it anytime I want to, rather than waiting in line to go, you know, and fighting for this beer that you can get the same kind of qualities elsewhere, I guess.
So what were some of the strange, like, states that had, every state makes beer, right? Did we figure that out?
They have a beer from every state. I don't know if they didn't necessarily go to say territory, so there wasn't anything from Puerto Rico or Guam or anything that. But one of my favorites from Chicago they picked from Illinois is the Bourbon County Stout. And if you
Goose Island,
and if you've had a chance to enjoy that one, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you're looking at 12% somewhere in there, aged in bourbon barrels. Crazy good. I'm trying to find, as I'm talking through here, some ones from...
Well, there's one from Arizona called Barrio Brewing Company, which is a great name. Copperhead American Pale Ale, right. I guess out of Tucson.
Yeah, I'm looking for one from one of my favorites from Minnesota. And you might be thinking, you know, there's plenty of them. There's Summit. There's a bunch of other ones there that are fantastic. But they picked Furious by Surly Brewing Company. And it doesn't make it very far out of Minnesota. So if you're not near the Minnesota, you're not going to get a chance to taste this beer.
Yeah.
But it's a 7.5% IPA. Comes in at, I don't know, something like 85 IBUs. But it's one of my favorite. Comes in a nice tall boy can, you know, like there a 16 ounce can. So it's all good.
I think one of the interesting things about beer and talking about the U.S. kind of brings me to something I was talking about the other day. This country is really big, and we have all these breweries in all these states, and everybody in every state wants a beer from another state. It's just the craziest thing. And it's like, we want a beer from Minnesota, and the people in Minnesota want California beer. And, you know, have you ever done any beer trading? I mean, there's so many different little things like that, like beer trading. People legally or illegally, not sure, send beer across the state lines in the mail or UPS or whatever they do. I mean, there's huge forums dedicated to this stuff. What do you think it is that we always want something from somewhere else?
I don't know. The grass is greener on the other side of the fence kind of thing. And one of the a fault that I have with myself too is that there'll be plenty of beers that I think that are really great, but as soon as I can start to get them on an everyday basis, then I kind of lose interest in it, and then I'm looking for something else, you know. And so those I'm as a big a offender of that, I guess, as anyone else, that I want to try something new. I want to try something that maybe somebody else, my neighbors, haven't had before, and maybe it's just the one-upsmanship, you know. Hey, I'm a bigger beer geek than you.
Yeah, I'm a bigger beer geek. Well, I mean, it holds true in wine. I mean, our guest today is from a winery, and with wine, you see it in the auctions all the time. I mean, it's just insane where, you know, these bottles go for thousands of dollars because I'm going to have it, you're not going to have it, and there's only so many of these bottles, and thousands of these bottles don't even get opened. I was reading, an entire article about how these wines, these first growth Bordeaux and things like that, just keep moving along from one collector to another. No one opens them because they don't have the heart to open a $4,000 or $5,000 bottle of wine. And it might be bad. That's the thing. So
right. And you know, a conversation that Joby and I had just a little earlier was about how we'd tasted some old Bigfoot barley wines, and how I can't hold on to them that long because I drink them before they get anywhere near a year old. But there are some people who have 10, 12-year-old barley wines, and they love those beers. But I prefer drinking them young, I guess. I like the hop characters and before they kind of lose their punch, I guess.
So, I mean, are you guilty of finding a beer, seeking a beer out, or, you know, looking online?
Yeah, and when I first started out, yeah. I mean, I paid I special ordered some Orval and some Kwok from Belgium. Because that was
direct.
Because that was the only way I could get it in South Dakota. I wanted those beers. I wanted to impress the guys who were coming over to have a beer with me that night. And so, you know, I ended up paying $100 for a 12 pack of beer, but the shipping and everything, you know, I'm as guilty as anyone, I guess, on that.
No, the biggest thing to me is I think it really doesn't matter the price or any of that stuff. If you don't like it, I mean, we're talking about gluten-free beers just a little while ago, and if you don't like it, you just don't like it. I mean, right. I don't care how much it costs. If it's $4,000 or if it's $4,
right.
If you love it, you love it, and that's the thing. It's so it's so personal. We can both try it, and you might hate it, I might love it, or vice versa. And so it's kind of hard to tell somebody else, hey, you need to like this. This is awesome. You have to you know.
Right, and the more that it's, the more people tell you about it, the higher the bar is set, and just the bigger the disappointment. Generally, for me, like, oh, they told me this was gonna be, this is gonna blow my mind.
Yeah, the best beer ever. It's just, it's so hard to put those kind of titles out there. The best this, the best ever. So that was really, really funny. The best beer from each state. Definitely check that out. I think it was, it's called the United States of Beer.
Right, the United States of Beer, the best brew from each of the 50 states. Give it a look out. I'll post the link here real quick on our Happy Hour Facebook page. And that leads me into, before we go to the break and get our wine on, I guess, is you can go to the chat room at My Buzz Radio. If you're listening to us, you're already there. Look at the bottom of the screen, and you'll see a little thing that says, click to join chat. Enter in your name and an email address, and you can join in. So we're going to take a quick break here. When we get back, we'll have Gary from Four Bricks Wines pouring us some tasty wines. We've got them all laid out here in front of us, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait.
All right. We'll catch you on the flip side.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right, welcome back, welcome back. Okay, I'm still sitting up a little too high for my mic, and I'm kind of scrunching down under. We've got Gary Stewart from Four Bricks Wines here this evening. And welcome, Gary.
Welcome, Gary.
Well, thank you, guys. I'm already very impressed. I can't believe you're just one show in, and you guys are this synced. Unbelievable.
Oh, boy.
We're just trying not to get too geeky on you, Gary, which we're about to do.
Right. I mean, especially with in-studio guests and everyone watching us. So we were just talking about before we came over how calm and relaxed we felt, and a studio full of people kind of kicks up the...
Yeah, are we allowed to say who's here right now?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, we've got Tom and Sandy from 805 with Tom and Sandy Show.
I think they're really enjoying watching somebody else do a show. Well, they look way too happy.
I know, and it has nothing to do with a big glass of wine that they're sipping on while they're watching us talk about everything here. So anyway, we'll get back to Gary here. And I learned of you through the Tom and Sandy Show, actually, and I'm fairly new to the area, so I don't know a lot of the wineries that are around, but I do know that just about every day, the same as breweries, you turn around and somebody else is, there's a new brewery or there's a new winery that I've just learned about or a brand new one that's opening up. So I guess my biggest thing is, how did you, my biggest first question for you is how did you get started in winemaking?
I think the same way you guys did. You know, we did, we don't call it home brewing, we call it home venting, but we were making wine in our garage.
All right.
Is how we got involved with it, and one thing led to another, and a couple people said, hey, this is pretty good, we'd like to buy some, and we thought, okay, good time, let's start making some wine for sale.
And so when you say who are you talking about? Was this a group of people?
Yeah, there was a few of us. We actually all live in Simi Valley, so we're talking about 20-some-odd people, about five to ten families, and we got up to a point, at one point, making 10 tons of fruit in garages, which sounds like a lot of wine, and it is. Every ton would bring in about 800 bottles of wine. So you're talking about 8,000 bottles of wine that we were making at one point.
So a lot of gifts for family and friends.
Exactly. And some of it wasn't so good. So, you know, there was a lot of salads being eaten, too.
it was the best vinaigrette ever, though.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you're making all this wine, giving it to your family, your friends. You mentioned that people asked if they could buy it, and I'm guessing that the same as on the homebrew side, where there's definite laws about alcohol sales that you've got to, you know, your permits, whatever. So what pushed you then? I mean, I've got people who ask me all the time, can I buy your beer? No, but I'm still not necessarily pushed in that direction to open up a commercial brewery. So what pushed you then?
The couples that are involved with Four Bricks, there was a few of us that kind of, went out on our own. And we would go travel to other countries. And in traveling to other countries, we started doing wine tasting and searching out wines, some incredible wines in Italy and France and Spain. And it was our trip to Spain. We were a little drunk. We were eating some really good Manchego cheese, a little Albarino. Nice. And we said, hey, you know, if we ever want to do this, maybe now is the time to do it. And if we're going to do it, let's make blends that we've had together on our travels. And so that was the whole thought behind it, is making these classic blends from all over the world with, of course, California grapes, which we think are the best in the world.
Yeah, and that's something that I've come to I guess understand about wine, and from a strictly newbie sort of vantage point, when I first started drinking wines, I thought it was one grape, but that's not the case. You're blending these, and so how do you decide on a blend?
Well, the blends that we're doing at Four Bricks are classic blends. So these blends have been going on for years and years and years, some of them, you know, 1,000 years in the different countries. And the blends are brought in by the type of grapes that we're growing or indigenous to that area. I'm not, and you guys got to forgive me here and on the radio wave, I'm not a beer aficionado, although I can tell you we drink a lot of beer. The saying is it takes a lot of beer to make a little wine. That's definitely what we're doing when we're there. You know, we're right down the street from Surf Brewery, right. So, you know, their Mondo Cream Ale does pretty well for us all the time down there. But anyways, off that plug, what I imagine is that you guys have different barleys and wheats and things like that, or hops that you guys are looking from different countries, and probably have different names for those.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Very much the same with grapes, and these grapes are actually all what they call vinifera. They're the European wine grape, but from there's a lot of different little segments of it. So a Sangiovese grape, for example, that you would find in Italy is totally different taste-wise than a Syrah grape that you would find from France.
Very good. I love Sangiovese.
Yeah, that's right. Wonderful. That's the one I didn't bring for you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You brought plenty. Don't worry, Gary. We're okay.
Sorry about that. Yeah, okay. No, but I love the trips to Italy. That's one of my faves.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, would you say it's safe to say that wine is made in the vineyard? I mean, it's really, I think that is the biggest difference between beer and wine to me. It almost seems like a brewmaster will take these raw ingredients and create the wine. Not saying that a winemaker is not doing that, but really you can't make good wine out of bad grapes.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And I don't know. I don't know if you can take bad hops and make good wine with it, or good beer with it. But with wine, you're working with fresh product. You know, we just finished harvest here a few weeks ago, and we're working with fresh product, and it is. It is 99% of it's done in the vineyard. The winemaker, I look at them as a custodian to the wine. All we do is take it in and see it through. There's some nuances. There's some things that we can do to add a flavor or flair to it. If we go wild yeast, native yeast, if we're going French oak, American oak, Hungarian oak, if we're aging it in barrel or tank, there's some things we can do to definitely add our influence and our artistic value to the wine itself, but for the most part, the fruit kind of speaks to you and tells you what it wants to do.
Right. Okay. And how involved are you guys in the selection of grapes? Or are you guys? I noticed I see Paso, San Ynez. Guys going up there? Or?
Oh yeah, yeah. I actually drive up. Actually, Tom and Sandy, who's sitting in the audience, they've been up with us. I drive up. I pick up the grapes. I bring them down. We do all the crush here in Ventura. And all the venting and everything else takes place right here in Ventura. You'll see grapes from, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but at our winery, you'll see grapes from all over California. We truly feel, after being all over the world, that California has the ability to grow the best grapes, but not every varietal grows best from that area or region.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what we're doing is bringing in Rhone blends from Paso Robles, some white wines and some cool weather wines from San Ynez, and some incredible Petit Syrah from the Russian River. You guys were talking about Russian River brewery.
Okay, and then is that what you've got bobbles there, and I saw that it was a North Coast. Did it say North?
Yeah, North Coast. You're right.
Okay, so that's where you're getting those grapes in?
So. Yeah. So in winemaking, we have AVAs. So these are regions that we can put on the bottle. And North Coast would include Napa, Sonoma, Lake County areas. And the Bobbles, which is the first wine that I wanted to make for you guys, because it's bubbly, so I figured it would go along. It's kind of a natural progression going from beer to wine. It's done with the dosage, so you've got a little fermentation that happens in the bottle itself, a lot like the home brewers do.
Okay.
And so you're going to get the nice tiny little bubbles. And North Coast includes, this Bobbles includes Chardonnay, which we get from the Napa area, and then Pinot Noir from the Russian River. So that's why we call it North Coast, because it fits inside that AVA.
All right. Well, we're going to let we're going to have Gary open this here, and we're going to get the cork on air here.
Yeah,
while he's doing, as soon as he finishes that, Joby, can you speak to what with the dosage?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So yeah. We'll let him
wait
pop
for you to
here.
Pop this,
Okay. Here we go. Whoop.
There it is.
That's great. Oh, that was great radio right there.
All right. So speaking to the
dosage would be what the Belgian and actually some of the American beer companies refer to as secondary fermentation or bottle fermented. So re-fermentation again. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, but
you're right.
Right before you put the final cork, the cork that's going out to market, they will actually add a little bit of sugar to reawaken the yeast that's already in the bottle. So basically you're creating a secondary fermentation in the bottle. And depending how much you do, I mean, there's different formulas, right? Depends if you want something a little sweeter,
yep,
drier, as you're putting the bottle out to market. And then you cork, put the cage on, and you have secondary fermentation, just like how the Belgian beers have the sediment at the bottom and the yeast, pretty much the same method.
All right.
Yeah, so in winemaking, they would call it Champenoise method
right.
Champenoise. It's Champagne, France is classic for using this method. And what you typically get, much like the Belgian beers, which I love, by the way, you get a much tinier, finer bubble rather than injecting
right.
CO2 into it. So where a big bubble would be more like a Coca-Cola or Pepsi,
right.
This is definitely going to be more... a mm-hmm. tiny fit bubble.
Okay. So I'm swirling it and giving it a good sniff here.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the color, Gary, as we're kind of looking at this? Now, this is white wine and this is white grapes and red grapes?
Well, it's, and it's classic champagne blend. They would call it Blanc de Noir.
Right.
So the Blanc would be your Chardonnay. And then they use a red grape, Pinot Noir, but they press it right away. So you remove the skins, and the juice inside the grape itself, the vinifera grape, and that's how you know it's a vinifera, is white. The juice is always white. So like a Welch's grape juice, which would be Concord grape, would be a red color inside and out.
Okay.
So your color comes from the skin.
Yes, the color comes from the skin.
And you guys don't want any of that. You don't want that contact.
Not in the Blanc de Noir, right. But if you did a rosé, you would let it sit for a little while and pick up a little of the skin color and then go ahead and make champagne with that.
All right. So when you're looking at any one of these wines here, the color is coming from the skins and
yes.
not necessarily from the juice that's being, squished out
Correct.
Of?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Very good.
Do you guys stomp your grapes by foot? I'm sure you have a...
We don't. We have a machine to do that. We brought in over 40 tons this year, so that's a lot of stomping with the foot. Although what you'll find with winemakers, they get lazy after time. So it's actually the punch down, and Tom can talk to us about the punch down. He got to do that once. It's a good workout. And what the punch down is it's actually pushing the skins back down into the juice itself to extract the flavor and color. Mm. We talked about the color and the flavor both coming from the skins themselves. The skins will start to float on top of the wine over time. So you have to keep pushing it in and in and in and in. And that's a lot of work, especially in the beginning when the grapes haven't really broken down much. So what you'll often see is a winemaker take off his clothes, down to his skibbies, jump into the bin, and start walking around. And that's so he could punch it down.
Okay.
It's just a little easier.
You want to extract more color and more flavor.
Exactly, yeah.
So we've got this, the nose, I guess, is that a correct wine term? So the aroma. Yeah. So
just like beer.
We're talking, you know, there's, what I want to say, kind of a pear, maybe. I don't know if that's,
yeah.
Is that what I'm supposed to be picking up?
That's, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else should we be looking for while we, just in the nose and then in the taste? Because this is, it's delicious, first of all. I mean, I've already had a couple. I've already jumped.
So this is a Brut. We talked about the dosage. On this one, we went with a Brut, which is a dry, or tends to be a drier wine. Now, in Champagne, extra dry is sweet, and Brut is not sweet. It's a weird thing that they do there. Very different than beer making. Mm-hmm. You know, like extra dry would be super, you know, right, no sugar at all. Mm-hmm. So kind of the opposite. But this has very little residual sugar, if any at all. You need a tiny bit because there's a lot of acidity in Champagne. They pick these grapes very early. So the acidity for you beer geeks out there would be probably 3.1, 3.2 on the pH, which I think on the beer side, you guys are always looking at something much more closer to neutral, right? Around 7, you know, 6 to 7, right. Something like that.
Right, unless you're looking at a sour beer.
Sour beer, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have people asking us all the time for barrels for sour beer, so I'll have to try that stuff. I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, if you're putting those out to market, they'll go.
Yeah.
So just there, there'll be plenty
there's
of people.
There's always a demand for your
for used barrels, for
you
sure.
You were talking about the acidity, Gary. It would just be kind of fun. I was looking at your name, obviously, Four Bricks. Can you talk to us about how you got that name? I mean, Bricks, what does that mean?
So Bricks in the wine is like baling units, I guess. I don't know. You guys have a couple of different terms that you use for measurement of sugar.
Right, and specific gravity.
But
Plato is one for commercial breweries.
Okay, so Brix is the measurement that we use, and it just measures the amount of sugar in the grape, actually, that comes in. So for us, 24, 25, 26 Brix is pretty typical. That'll give you 13 to 15% alcohol, just depending on the degree of Brix.
Right.
And so four is for the four regions that we travel to. Spain, Italy, France, and then, of course, California. So we make tributes to each of those in our blends. And so it's our four sweet spots is really what we're doing.
Oh, pretty good.
All right.
Yeah.
So four Bricks would actually not make a good wine.
No, it'd be a kind of a not-too-sweet port and an overly sweet wine.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Ports are going to come in closer to about six to seven Bricks.
Okay.
On the sweet scale, it would be kind of in that not so good area.
All right, and tell us about your play on bubbles here.
So Bobbles is the name of this sparkling wine. We just came out with this before Thanksgiving this year. It's a project I've been working on for quite a while now. And Bobbles, I didn't know what that was. The girls said, "Hey, we're going to call this thing Bobbles," and I guess it's the jewelry that women wear. You know, the big fake jewelry and all the stuff they wear is what it is. So I actually am one of the artists that works on the labels.
Oh, very good.
And so I thought, okay, perfect. I'll start putting something together. And I came up with, this lady on here who kind of looks like Audrey Hepburn.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, is what we're kind of doing. So we made the whole play on Audrey Hepburn. You know, 50s and 60s is this kind of classic Champagne. She's a classic lady. And so we put her on the label. And so that's our Bobbles.
All right.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful package. I know the people at home can't see it, but it's the purple and the packaging on it.
Right. So if you want to take a look at the label, go to fourbricks.com, I think. All right. So we're running up against the second break here. So we'll take a quick break. We'll finish up because I'm not dumping this. There's no dump bucket for me on this one. And we'll finish this one up, and then we'll come back for another one.
We'll be back with Gary from Four Bricks.
All right.
You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
All right. Welcome back to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. And we have Gary here from Four Bricks Winery.
Coming back, during the break, we're talking to Gary about Bobbles. And if you want to taste this, you have to go to the winery. And Gary, give us the address on that real quick.
The address is 2290 Eastman Avenue, Unit 109 in Ventura. We're right below Market, and McGrath is right where we're at.
Okay.
Nice. And I should say that, just in case you don't know, it's Four Bricks, B-R-I-X, 4bricks.com. So don't try to put in B-R-I-C-K-S.
Right, that's not going to get you there.
It's not going to
happen. So although then, we own that URL.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Very nice. That was smart.
But good, nice cover. Right.
So good. The next wine that we're looking at here, Gary, is to me is one of the most pronounced, mispronounced words, yes. I think, in the white wines. Viognier is what a lot of people say. But it's Viognier, right?
Viognier, yes.
And this is your Smitten?
Yes, this is a classic French white, one of the main French whites in the Rhone Valley. So the Rhone Valley is actually the area that when we were in France that we did. And so in the Rhone, you're going to get, in the white side, you're going to get Viognier, you're going to get Marsan, you're going to get Roussan, and Picapoul. There's some other crazy little ones, but those are the three main guys. And then on the red, we're going to go to that next. You're going to get Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, and any combination of those in the Rhone Valley.
All right, so I'm doing a sniff here, and the difference between the two. I mean, the Bobbles was more sweet to me, more of a pear. This one is more on coming back on. It's hard for me to pull it out. Maybe an apple on there. I don't know, but it's not as fragrant, I guess, as or sweet smelling as what the Bobbles was.
No. And part of that is the effervescence coming up from the wine, the Bobbles itself.
Mm-hmm.
With the Viognier, the classic taste that you get from Viognier is more of the stone fruit. So you should be getting, when you're tasting it, you should be getting some of the peaches and apricots and some of that type.
Honeysuckle.
Yeah, exactly. A little honeysuckle. Sometimes they even say banana peel, which is, I don't understand. I've never eaten a banana peel, but, you know, I've heard that before. And that's because we've done this in stainless steel. So this is 100% stainless steel, much more like beer, like straight up beer wine making, mm-hmm. Beer making. They in California, you will see them do barrel fermentation with Viognier and sometimes even oak fermentation in a long period. So it's going to make a different flavor profile. It's going to bring more of the tropical fruits out, believe it or not, when you go that route.
When you go barrel ferment.
Barrel ferment. So this is clean, crisp, fresh.
This is a... what do you call it? Patio sipper.
Yes.
Patio pounder. I mean, it's just really easy, delicious.
And I like this actually much warmer than it is right now, but I had it in the bag next to Bobbles, which was cold. The warmer this gets, the more fragrant it gets, and also the more viscous. You're going to get a little bit more of the oil slick thing going on.
For on a mouthfeel.
On a mouthfeel, yeah.
And that's... And I mean, just between the two, obviously, without any carbonation in there. But that was one of the things that I noticed right away was just that it felt like this a coating sort of mm-hmm. of, I guess, the slickness is what you're talking about there.
Yeah, it's definitely has more weight than the sparkling.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite pairings is Viognier with spicy Thai. It's
unbelievable.
That's hands down, yeah. Probably one of my favorite pairings yeah. around.
Thai food and Viognier is classic.
I wish more Thai places would carry Viognier. we could get out there and tell them.
It's too bad nobody else could see the your facial expression. Like Thai, oh yeah.
That's perfect.
I guess that's what I
got to try when I get home.
Yeah, you have to do it.
Believe me, there's not a Thai food restaurant you can find in the Northern Rhone Valley. So some Thai guy's got to go there and like set shop up, and he's going to make a fortune with these French guys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. There's just something about it. This is very good, Gary. It's the mouthfeel, the smell, everything is just really good. You just want to keep sipping it.
Yeah, and this is, so we were talking about the grapes, where the last two grapes came from Northern California. These grapes come from right up the hill here in San Ynez Valley, so about an hour north of us, in a famous vineyard called Camp Four Vineyards, which was one of Fess Parker's vineyards. Fess Parker being Daniel Boone. You guys are way too young to know that.
I do know that.
Fess Parker was kind of the god of that area. He started the wine industry up there, really took a lot of the new, younger winemakers under his arm and helped them out.
Yeah.
And so this is a great vineyard, classic vineyard, been around for a long time. And we also source two other grapes in there, Grenache Blanc, which we're doing for the first time this year, and then also Cunois, which goes into the next wine that we'll be tasting, Rendezvous.
Oh, wow.
Well, as you're talking about, you know, I mean, we've come from the North Coast, and we're in Santa Ynez right now, and one of the, that led to a question I had about, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but terroir, and just how, my question was, does that change? Does the terroir change from year to year? I mean, I know that it's from the base of the valley as opposed to the slopes. Obviously, that's going to be a different soil texture. But from year to year, does that change, I guess?
It does. It can change to a degree, but the characteristics should always be there. When you're drinking a Napa Cab from the Rutherford Valley, you tend to get a eucalyptus kind of flavor or mint kind of flavor to the wine. And when you taste that, it's almost classic. It almost brings you right back to that area, and that's what they talk about with terroir. If you've been there, if you've smelled the fauna and flora in the area, it ends up on the grape, because when we bring the grapes in, we don't clean them. So when we're fermenting with that, if there is eucalyptus in the vineyard, there's going to be eucalyptus in the wine.
Oh, fantastic!
And so that's where a lot of that comes from, with that. You know, when you're doing barleys and some of the breads that you guys use to make wine or beer, a lot of that's being dried. So you're mm-hmm. losing some of that. Right. I can imagine with the hops, though, that might be more indicative of maybe bringing in that area. Right. So if you're in mm-hmm. a certain part of Bavaria, you could probably smell some of the flavors that are coming in on those hops.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I just lost my question there.
That's okay. Tell us about Smitten.
So Smitten, all of our wines have these kitschy names. And you know, we have two girls that are basically the bosses, and so they kind of get to name everything. You'll notice that nothing in our whole portfolio is really named. Well, maybe one, Scoso, maybe a guy name. But everything else is kind of a feminine name, and we just gave in to them because the arguing got too long. So Smitten is a wine that they just felt smitten by. They felt they fell in love with it. And we can call it Viognier, but sometimes we blend another one of the Rhone varietals into it. We've done Marsan in the past. This year was the first year we did straight-up Viognier. And this next year, as I told you, we're talking about putting a little Grenache Blanc, which is another Rhone varietal.
And you guys, you're allowed a certain amount of leeway, right, with your percentage as far as calling it Viognier or even the AVA, right, for a certain
sure.
amount of a percentage of grapes that you get from there.
Sure.
Well, I mean, without getting too much detail, what exactly?
It's basically,
what are the percentages?
Basically, we can call a Viognier if we haven't put 25%. Of anything else, more than 25% of anything else into it, unless it is vineyard designate, and then I believe it goes down to 15%. So we can call it Viognier, but we could still add, you know, Picapoul or something else into it to help spice it up on the back end.
So one of the things, just to get totally geeked out on, that I love about wine, I don't know, country, is the microclimates. So depending on where on that hill, it plays a huge role in what this grape tastes like. So this particular grape, where is this? Is this on a sunny side? Is it a cool side? Kind of give us a geographical sort of idea of where this grape came from.
So Camp 4 Vineyards is, if you guys are familiar with the 154, which is the back way into mm-hmm. San Ynez.
It's a nice wine.
Yeah. And there's an area called Four Points, which is the stop sign right there. There's kind of a little Shepherd of the Hill church or something on the side. And you kind of come back down that hill. It's called Baseline, down that valley. It's basically a flat plateau. You've got all the runoff from Lake Kachuma, I think is Lake Kachuma right there. Yeah. And so in that area, you've got the natural runoff. So this is kind of done on the upper plateau, just above the lake. It's really would be considered more of a valley fruit, but they get the great cool climate. One of the things with grape, you want to make sure that you have nice warm days, but you want to have cool nights. That's a big deal because the grapes are making sugar all day long. You don't want them to make sugar all night long because then what's going to happen is they're going to mature too quickly. They're going to put in all sorts of sugar. You're going to get all sorts of sugar out of it, but you're not going to have a grape that's fully ripe if that makes sense. So
okay.
you have this sweet grape with kind of this bitter tannin
okay.
going on in it.
Yeah, you want the grapes to work hard. And then rest.
Exactly. So at night you want them to shut down. And so that's why places like San Ynez, Napa, Paso Robles, it's 105 in the day and mm-hmm. 65 at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy delta. So you end up with some pretty hard or pretty intense wines out of that area.
Does Viognier like a cooler climate, or is it more of a...
Definitely. I think Viognier does better in the cooler climate. You know, there's some incredible Viognets coming out of some of the areas in Paso. But my personal opinion is I tend to like it in a little cooler climate area. And I think San Ynez just has done very well with it.
And, of course, all stainless steel.
Yeah, all stainless. So on the Grenache Blanc, we're doing that in barrel ferment. So we're going to try that a little bit different.
Okay. So why don't you go ahead and pour out the Grenache here.
So this is the second wine that we brought you that's a still wine. This is a wine that we call Rendezvous. So I didn't know how much you guys were into wine, and you guys led on to the fact that you're a little more into wine than you wanted to admit. Although you're definitely beer heads, I understand this. So this wine is going to be more of what I consider, you know, you guys like these IPAs and bitter beer units and all this kind of crazy stuff. I like it. I mean, I like the bitter beers, but I definitely like a sweetness to the bitter beer. So where my bitter beer kind of wheelhouse is when the alcohol gets high enough to sweeten it up.
Right. Double IPA.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at with it, mm-hmm. or black IPA mm-hmm. or whatever it may be. So Rendezvous is definitely going to be more of the serious wine drinker's wine. This is a classic, what they would call a Chateauneuf du Pape blend, which is in the southern part of the Rhone Valley. You're going to have Grenache, Syrah. Grenache is the king down there, Syrah, and Mourvedre. And then there's many other grapes, probably five or six other red grapes that they use, including Cunoise is another grape that we use. All these grapes come from Paso Robles, except, like I said, the Cunoise, the little bit of Cunoise that we put in.
And is this is this a stainless steel too, or is this?
No, this is a full barrel age for about 18 months. We use probably about 10% new barrel on this one, and then the rest of it is either we try to use about 80% once used. Once used barrels are really hard to find, but they work really well for small winemakers.
And then blend together.
And then we blend it in. Yeah. Okay. So we when we do these wines, and it's pretty classic that way, is we bring them all as a varietal to finish. So the Grenache, Syrah, Mourvedre is all done to the point of blending, which is about maybe 13 or 14 months into it. We'll blend it, put it back in the barrel, and let it age for another 4 or 5 months, and then go ahead and bottle it.
Okay.
Yeah. It always amazes me when you look at the blends, when you look at 47%, 25%, 15%, 13%. Some winemakers, they put 2% in there, and I just think to myself, can you really taste 2% of something or 1.5% of something? Can you tell us a little bit about your blending when you're sitting down? Are you taking samples from each barrel, and then that's how you come up with your percentages?
Well, it's interesting. We get that question a lot. And last year we did, and we're going to do a few more this year, we actually did a blending party. We had so many people saying, hey, we want to see what this is all about. So we brought out the single varietals, and we sat down with them, and we kind of taught them what was going on, and they went through it. They were blown away that when you raised it 5% or dropped it 5%, the difference in taste, it really does make a big difference. Mm. So what we do is we'll sit down, for example, with these four wines that are in Rendezvous, and we'll taste through each of them individually first, and we take notes, mental notes and physical notes, with the flavors, you know, where's it coming in? Is it the front of the palate, back of the palate? Is there bitterness? Is there a sweetness? Is there a cherry? We'll put all of those notes down, and then we'll kind of throw all the kids in the pool. We'll say, hey, we bought, you know, so many tons of each of them. We'll throw them all in the pool, and then that's kind of where we start. Typically, we've never had it work for us. So then what we do is we say, okay, we're losing some of the front palate. What was the grape that was giving us the front palate? We'll boost the front palate up a little bit.
Right.
Now we need a little bit more of a finish. So we'll look for that grape with a finish. Now, sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes the grape that you originally had or the wine that you originally had that was giving you the finish doesn't give you the finish. It actually goes negative. So sometimes it takes hours to figure it out. And there's other times where we sat down and, you know, 2-3 blends into it, we've got it.
Okay.
Yeah, oh. Sometimes you'd rather be lucky than good, right? So
exactly,
falls into place.
Well, this is again delicious, and I like the there isn't this huge tannin, you know, like suck all the moisture out of your mouth kind of thing. It's just this nice rounded, and when you're talking about how front palate and back palate, and until you said that, I didn't realize that that's really what's happening, you know. And just like any well-made food or beer or wine, you know, you're hitting all of these marks all sure. the way down, all the way past, you know, until you swallow. And this is, it's just fantastic. It's a great one.
And it's a great food wine. This one goes fantastic with cheeses. I mean, Paradise Pantry, you'd mentioned them up the street. We've done some pairings with some of the cheeses from there, and the stinkier the cheese, the better with this one, really. Mm-hmm. Blue cheese is just unbelievable with it.
I can see that. Yeah, definitely. So that's a great lead-in to where can we, other than stopping in and at the winery, where else can we find Four Bricks?
We're in quite a few places here in Ventura County. Obviously, Paradise Pantry, I mentioned, a good one up the street. Cafe Zach, incredible restaurant, carries our stuff. I know I'm going to forget a whole bunch of them because my wife deals with that. But I know that the Sidecar has it here in town, so I can't leave those guys out. And then as far as places to purchase the wine, we're down in... we go down as far as Thousand Oaks right now, so you can get it at the Wine Yard for the people in the south part of the county.
But the best place to get it would probably be at your tasting room.
I've
seen some. I've never been there, admittedly, but that's going to change. But I've seen some incredible pictures. You guys do some really cool stuff in the tasting room. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I saw you guys have music, and it seems like a really good time.
Yeah, we did summer concerts last year. We brought in a bunch of local bands and did, I think, 4 or 5 summer concerts. That was pretty good. Pretty much every month, we've got something going on. Every third Friday, we do a cool little thing called Foodie Friday, where we bring in a guest chef from the area and have them pair 3 of our wines with 3 of their dishes. So it's like 3 bites and 3 wines for $15. Mm.
Oh, wow,
and it's
wow.
incredible what these chefs come up with. We have some super, super talented chefs here in Ventura. We're pretty lucky.
Yeah, and this the third Friday's coming up here pretty quick.
Yeah, so we're doing it with the Jolly Oyster. So if you haven't checked that guy out, he's absolutely awesome. And we're actually taking charge. You know, Jolly Oyster's not, they're a food purveyor, so to speak. So we're actually going to do, one raw oyster. We're going to do one that is going to be smoked with a barrel that we've ground up and serve that. And then we're going to also do an oyster stew.
Oh, very nice.
So we're going to do 3 of them, and Four Bricks is going to take care of that for the first time.
I had never thought about using when you're grilling or you're smoking or whatever it is, you know, I go to cedar right away.
Sure.
I mean, that's what it is, but I never thought about finding wine staves or used whatever and then using that and then imparting that flavor into whatever it is that you're grilling.
Yeah, we're going to try it. We haven't done it yet, so...
All right, well,
it sounds like it'll work, though. It sounds like it'll work.
Yeah, let us know what
well, you guys come on by. We'll feed you some cooked oysters.
That's not a bad idea, either.
And then there was one other thing coming up. Oh, the wine, the food and wine challenge?
Yeah, this is awesome, and this is not something that we're putting on. We're part of this, and they do this every year. This is, the second year now. It's put on by the Ventura County Winery Trail, Ventura County Wine Trail. And you go to VCVenturaCountyWineTrail.com, I think is what it is. And what they do is they bring in 12 of the wineries in the area, and they pair us with 12 restaurants. And it's a blind draw, so everybody's drawn up. Last year we were with Cafe Zach. They did an incredible steak with blue cheese and the rendezvous. Nice. This year we're actually with Aloha. Steakhouse is who we're going to be with this year, so we're pretty excited about that. They're good guys. And it's a blast. You go in, I don't know what the price is. If you go to VenturaCountyWineTrail.com.
I think it was $45, I think.
Yeah.
There's a pre-sale.
There's a pre-sale. And I would get it now because I just was at Herzog today, and they told me that it's going to be sold out here pretty quickly. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's 12 dishes with 12 wines, and And I'm telling you, you're going to have a great time going to that. You get to see these wineries that just bring in some incredible wines in the area, and these chefs just go crazy. I mean, they make some awesome food.
All right. Yeah, that sounds like a great deal. It's going to be Oxnard Embassy Suites, so make sure, you know, plan ahead and everything else.
That's in January. Was that January
24th, I think. It's coming up. All right, so we're running short on time. You get some wine in us, and we start talking, and just keep talking, I guess, don't we?
Gary, thank you for being here. Awesome wines and a great story. And
well, thank you, guys. Best of luck with the show, and hope to be back soon.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll come and see you.